We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Hello. Thank you guys so much for coming today. And thank you to Ellen Doerr, Director of Digital Learning in Renton School District in Washington State, for joining us for an EdWeb webinar. Over in the chat section, feel free to introduce yourselves, let us know who you are and what you want to get from Ellen's presentation today, and also what we can have a conversation about at the end. All right, a little bit about Ellen. And I'll have her introduce herself as well, but she is the Director of Digital Learning for Renton School District in Washington State, which is actually just in our back door as well. She works with lots of different people to make sure she's bringing in those high potential digital resources in a systematic and sustainable way. And I'm really excited for you to see how she makes sure that she is partnering with her teachers and administrators to make sure that she's seeing that these resources are doing something really great for student learning and also making the teacher's job in the classroom that much easier. As a past educator and someone who is constantly affecting education in the Renton School District, we welcome Ellen.
Thank you so much. It's really great to be here. So as Kelly said, I am the Director of Digital Learning for the Renton School District. And I'll tell you a little bit about my background first before we dig into my current work. So I started as an eighth grade language arts teacher, and I did that work for 11 years. And through that, I developed a real commitment to equity and inclusion. I taught in a school with a high free and reduced lunch population, really high diversity, and a range of needs. And I was really struggling with how do I differentiate well enough for my students, because if I teach to the middle, it's like maybe 7 students out of 32. Like there's not much of a middle. And that's when I kind of stumbled into digital learning, blended learning, personalized learning. And I found that there was so much potential in that to be a much more effective instructor. And that's what really like reignited my passion for my work, because our work is exhausting. It's very complex and complicated, but so incredibly worth it. So I currently work in Renton as the Director of Digital Learning, and later you can use these slides to access different resources. Our website is linked there, and we have a number of different things for you to look through, and you can always find my contact info there and follow up with me with any questions. So first, a little bit about Renton. For those of you who don't know it, Renton is just south and east of Seattle, Washington. Our district is urban and suburban. It covers 4 cities, mainly Renton, but also Seattle, Newcastle, and Bellevue. We have 14 elementary schools. We have 3 middle schools. Currently, we'll have 4 next year. 3 traditional high schools, and then 6 alternative schools. And as you can see from our demographics, we have a lot of students of color. We have a number of different needs in our student population. And we have really great communities, which I love. So my role is as the leader of our digital learning team, and our goal is really to shift teacher practice to increase agency and equitable outcomes for students. So this isn't necessarily what you think of when you hear the term like instructional technology, but our work is really around engaging and empowering students and helping teachers make those instructional shifts to be able to do that. So we are focused on intentional and innovative uses of technology in order to better meet the needs of all students. We're focused on differentiation and personalization, and we're focused on student engagement and empowerment. My team really serves as a bridge between tech services and between learning and teaching. So that means that we work directly with schools, and then we can inform tech services like, hey, that password change is having a huge impact. So could we think about like minimizing the number of characters, or could we think about like changing the number of days that the password change is required for? So we try to kind of like translate. And I do quite a bit of that when schools have a technical request and tech services hears it one way, and I can say, oh, what they're actually asking is this. So it's kind of fun to be that connector and that bridge. Additionally, my team includes 5 coaches who support specific schools. with coaching support, professional learning experiences. They can do planning, modeling, co-teaching. So they are really instructional leaders. And the way that we've kind of determined where the coaches support schools is by first looking at the needs of all of our schools and then thinking about our team, thinking about expertise, experience, and different sorts of projects that people are leading on. And then we've assigned support that way. The coaches on my team are also supporting specific tools or resources or content areas. So for example, one of the coaches has a background in middle school literacy. So he partners really intentionally with our language arts department, with social studies, with ELL, and he works with middle school and then with literacy teams because of his experience. Another part of our team that extends to all of our schools is that we have a teacher leader at each school that to receive a stipend to help to support technology integration. So they are called technology integration specialists. Once a month, we pull that team together and we do quick connection, a few technical updates. Like we try to minimize that to only about 5 minutes. And then we spend a lot of time on practice and strategies. So we will often have a teacher leader share something they're doing in their classroom, really focused on impacting student learning. And then we'll do some sort of collaborative work together that should be something the teacher leaders can take back to their schools and use there. And so that's another way that our team kind of impacts our schools. And then my coaches partner with those technology integration specialists as well. The other thing we're doing this year as a team is we're really increasing resources and instructional models within the district. So during this year, we've added 2,900 new devices for students. So quite a bit of an increase, and we have been able to go out and support every single school in creating a plan for how they want to leverage resources in order to meet their overall school goals. So though we do talk about some of those technical pieces, we're really thinking bigger picture around instruction and around school improvement plan or annual action plan and overall goals of a school. And we've been able to do that together. So I'll start first with the vision that we have for digital learning. I think it's really important to always connect to the why and start there. My team and I have talked about that, where sometimes people kind of ask us like, no, just, you know, they want to know where to click. And we always want to start with why to click. So thinking about why are you using something? What would be the value in this? Like starting there first. So what we did, early in my time in Renton is we came up with a vision together. So the way we co-created this was we asked a team to think about the creation of a vision that was student-centered, aspirational, and concise. We also wanted to make sure it covered everything we thought that could happen with the increase of powerful technology. So we have this vision, and what I often do when I work with teams, actually, I always start by looking back at the vision, but another thing I ask people to do is read it carefully and then kind of pay attention to what they are reacting to or what they are challenged by. So part of that includes like often a turn and talk or whatever, but right now I would love to give you an opportunity to read through this carefully and then write in the chat what you're connecting to, what you're challenged by, what you're paying attention to, or what sounds promising. Excellent. Okay, so I see a lot of people commenting on different things. And this is often what happens when I show this to people. We kind of see these different things that stand out to us. And what we were hoping with this is that it's something everyone will say yes to. I think every teacher, every school, every student that I've shown this to doesn't say like, well, I don't know that that's very valuable. There may be some questions around what does authentic learning environments mean, but there's nothing around like, yeah, I'm not into this. Like people are like, yes, that's amazing. Of course I want to do that. Like that is what I want for my students. So oftentimes I'll ask people what stands out to you. The biggest things from teachers would be things like differentiation, collaboration, creativity. And then in this slide, I've highlighted some things that I've heard from district leaders. And it's kind of been interesting to me to see that evolution where district leaders are really picking up on the equity and personalized learning, and classroom teachers are thinking about differentiation, collaboration, creativity. We've also started looking at this vision with students. So we've gone to all of our secondary schools and asked students four questions about this vision. We start with what questions they have. And often kids ask super amazing questions, of course, because they're brilliant. They say things like, what is your action plan for making this happen? Do you have a budget for this work? Which I told our superintendent, he was like, wait, kids said that? I'm like, yes, they did. So they want to know things like that. They also want to know, is this good for all students? Is this good for students who receive special education services? They're really thinking about that inclusion as well, which I love. The second thing we ask them is, what do you like about this vision? And they call out personalized learning more than anything else. They say, this makes sense because we don't all learn the same way. And some kids will even say, like, I'm okay with most of the way school is taught, but I know it doesn't work for everybody. So some people need more personalization. So to me, that's really powerful that students are thinking about that, not just for themselves, but for each other. And they value that. The third question we ask them is, what is your school doing now that gets to this vision? And what would your school need to do next? And so I've been able to take that student feedback, put it together, and then share it back with schools. So then as a school, we can look back at student voice and say, okay, your students are saying right now they need clear, consistent expectations. That's not necessarily attached to what you might traditionally think of, as instructional technology, but it is incredibly important for a positive learning culture and learning environment. So we're trying to use that student voice to inform our practice. So that's one thing that we're doing around this vision. And I feel like it's really great work and has a lot of traction. So another piece that we're trying to be really thoughtful about is how we collect data from teachers. So I'm gonna dig into one example just to kind of give you some perspective around it. And this is one example, but I would do a similar thing with lots of different resources. So what we did last spring is sent a survey to teachers around some math digital tools. And I'm only pulling out the responses to one of the tools. And it's just to kind of give an example of what we do with this. So we sent this out to all the teachers who had access to this resource. And we're doing this in part to evaluate the resource to see, like, are you using it? Is it powerful? We're also trying to figure out how is our support for this? And thirdly, what are the instructional practices people are using with this? So we want to make sure that that aligns with our vision of instruction so that we know that we're using tools in the way that we think are most effective. So we also wanted to be able to disaggregate the data to see if there were trends that way. So we had a question around grade level taught, just asked if you use the tool. And the reason the question is written this way is, do your students use tool? We made a master, and then we would modify questions with the specific name of the tool. And so this example, I've kind of gone back to the generic. So how would you rate your expertise? Kind of letting people explain that they do or do not know how to use it. So for example, if we had gotten a lot of poor, your experience or expertise in using the tool, we would want to dig into that. Like, has it been your experience with it that has been poor, or is it your expertise that needs more support? So either way, we would want to figure that out. But what we were really looking at with this one is instructional practices. So question six really gets to that. So what we wanted to do was kind of see what are people doing with this resource. And this example happens to be Dreambox. So some of the questions that I showed to my team that we talked about later are like the third one down. I am strategic about who uses Dreambox in class. So only 27% of teachers said that they were strategic about that. We also knew at that time that we did not have enough of the resource, mainly devices, for every student to be using Dreambox. So it was pretty important that people were using it strategically. And we could see by self-reporting that they weren't yet. And so that would be something my team would be pushing on. And I just said they weren't strategic yet because we know they're going to get there. Another question that or a statement that I really pulled out with my team is, my students know why they use Dreambox, and my students know how their mathematics in Dreambox connects to their learning in class. Knowing why they use it was higher, almost 50%, but knowing how it connects to their learning in class was 26%. And I told my staff, that's not okay with me. Like, it is not okay with me that kids are using this and thinking it's in isolation and not understanding the broader connections. And that's something that we can impact with teacher practice. So I showed this data to my team to let them know this is what we need to impact, and this is how we can support our teachers. And then I look at the data regularly, and I use the data to inform instruction. We're much lower than I would like to see, and we expect to see those increase as people are using things more strategically. So kind of a lot of information packed into that one slide, but I think that this really does call out the places where we want to be pushing next, and that's what it helps us understand. Then we also asked specifically, what are you doing while your students are using this? So teaching my other students, conferring with students, working with small groups, assisting students using it, or monitoring. And ideally, monitoring would be something that would happen at the start of using a program, so the start of a school year. And then it should be moving into teaching other students, conferring, and working with small groups. So we feel like the monitoring and assisting pieces should be going away after you've been using something for a while, because your students have gained more independence in it. They maybe have a system for checking with a partner when they're stuck. They have some other ways of problem solving so that teachers can be maximizing that resource and maximizing themselves, because they know students are actively engaged in something that allows them to then work with other groups of students. And then we also wanted to check to make sure that students were having a good experience with the resource. So we looked for whether they were engaged and making progress. So you can see students prefer other activities, and students don't make progress are pretty small. So that's what we would want to see if we think a tool is a good tool. We also checked their progress in the tool against external progress. So we would want to be aligning that way as well. So I know that, like, sometimes people look at minutes to see what's the usage. So we do look at that as well, but we really want to think about a whole instructional model, just not minutes of a program, but what is the overall overall instructional model that's happening in a classroom, and how is that impacting student learning? And then we can't disaggregate which specific, you know, resource or practice it is exactly, but we can see what is contributing to student success in a classroom. And then I also asked an open-ended question around how the tool has changed or improved instructional practice. And what I pulled out were the answers I wanted other people to hear, because they were things that really showed that this tool was aligned with instruction and was allowing teachers to be able to better differentiate, better meet student learning needs. I'll give you a moment to read it. And then before we move from this survey example, I wanted to see if there are any specific questions around survey or the results of this survey.
So we do have some questions already for you, Ellen. They're okay. Not as much around the survey, but there was mm-hmm. one that Kari asked early.
From BlendSpace?
Would work here. Excuse me?
From BlendSpace?
Yeah.
I saw that question and I was like, wait, what does that mean? Because I couldn't quite read it. So I'm happy to field that one. You tell me what it was.
Because I think what it was saying is that tech is usually used as more of a reinforcement rather than a learning. And mm-hmm. how would you be able to address that in what you're working in right now?
That is a great question. Well, I think we want to think about when it is a reinforcement, when it is practice, and when it is a learning. So there are different ways that we can use it. My team and I talk a lot about, like, prioritizing the right resource for the right need. So there are some digital tools that I think are really good as reinforcement. They do some drills, they do some practice, they give immediate feedback. And that would be something that might not be adaptive. So that might be a program that is giving students some practice in fluency, for example, either mathematical fluency or reading practice. But then a tool for learning, I would want us to see something that's much more adaptive and has more opportunities for students to be creators and contributors. We just reviewed a number of higher level mathematics programs, and we were looking for, as a team centrally, we were looking for resources where students had to do the exploring themselves, not necessarily watch a video about someone else doing it. So I think that's one of the big shifts where we want to see the learning. It's like that active user of technology rather than a passive user. And I think some of that comes from the tool and some of that comes from the practice of using the tool.
And I like the way you distinguish between passive and active user, because I think that's where we really see the difference between that reinforcement versus learning.
Yes, I think that that's where that happens. I mean, learning takes struggle. So reinforcement is often, you've already done some of the struggle and you're just like, you're making sure that that's really in there, that learning is really in there. But the actual learning takes some messiness and some mistakes. And that's not, the mistakes are not necessarily where we want to reinforce, but we need to get kids to a place where then you are reinforcing something.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So I'll go into the next part, which is really around further support for instructional practices. So like I said, I've used that data with my team and said, like, this is what we can impact, because if we have kids that, you know, that don't know why they're using something, we need to support that. We need to help them understand that online to offline connection. So we've come up with, oh, and I'm sorry, there should be a bullet point on that first one in gray. We've come up with some preferred practices for using digital tools. So providing supports and fostering independence. This one is really important. And some of this, I think, happens before you've even gotten to using a digital tool. And I always give this example that as a classroom teacher, I think I enabled some passive behaviors in my students for quite a while because I thought I was helping them, because I felt like making them figure something out on their own wasn't good support. So I'll give an example. I would have a student say, like, what day is it? And I would say, and this is like maybe in March, I would say, oh, it's Wednesday. And you can tell by looking at the board here, because I've written the agenda. So it's Wednesday, the, you know, 24th. And I had to get to a place where I realized I was doing that and it wasn't helpful to them. And I had to start saying things like, how could you figure that out? One of the coaches on my team recently said that she did that in a classroom recently. She said, she referred to it as Ellen-ing a student. She was like, I totally Ellen'd this student. And the classroom teacher was like, that was such a good move. I forget that I need to do that sometimes. So one thing I would say for using digital tools is we give kids some practice using it, like all of us use it together. We go through some of the ideas and then we help them figure out how they're going to problem solve later on. And so some of that is about using a digital tool. Some of that is about independence and figuring out what kinds of questions to ask. So often we have the, you know, the three before me rule. You ask three people before you ask the teacher, but what do you ask them? Like, we have to scaffold a little more so that kids can be independent, or we have them work with partners so that they have a buddy right there with them. So that's that first one. That also connects to the asking supporting questions. So in addition to how could you figure that out, it might be things like, and what does this mean for you as a mathematician, or something broader that helps kids see how that learning connects with other pieces and supports their thinking. We also want to make sure we're ensuring meaningful and important work and tools. So sometimes that means we explicitly have a learning target for that. If we're doing stations, we have a specific learning target for that station, or we help students understand exactly why they're using something. And maybe that's your entry task question. And you ask students, why do you use this, or why is it valuable for your learning to use this, so that they're making that connection into why something is important. We also want to track and celebrate progress. Kids are super motivated by data. So when they get to see their progress in something, they're like, look at this. Last week I knew only 20% of this content. Now I know 65% of it. We also want to have a way that we are tracking their progress toward different like Common Core state standards. So that could be something where students are keeping track in an analog notebook of the standards that they're mastering in their digital tool as well. So they're seeing that what they're doing in that tool is connected to something else. And that also connects with that last one, online to offline instruction. So they understand all of this is supporting their learning. It's not like we do computer time and then we do something else. We're doing learning, or we're learning. And then the other one that I skipped over for just a moment there is intervening based on data. So part of what's so amazing about the powerful digital tools that are available in the world now is that they give us so much data. And with that, the teacher, who is the most powerful thing in the classroom, can be even more effective, because you can pull a group of students who are struggling with one issue, or you can see when a kid is stuck on one piece, and then you can help them figure out how to get past that one part. So the best digital tool is better in the hands of a great teacher. And part of that is teachers knowing how to look at the data and knowing how to inform their instruction because of it. So these are the practices we think are can work with anything and are not tool specific, they're tool agnostic. So we kind of share these generally as practices to use. Then we also want to think about all the time with what we're having students do, is this developmentally appropriate? Is it authentic, engaging learning? Are we empowering student creativity and agency? And then is this the right fit or right tool for the job? And so I'll give you a description of what's happening in this picture just to kind of explain it, because it hits all of those things. So these are students in a second grade classroom who were doing a close reading. So what the teacher did during this, it was like a 15 or 20 minute chunk of time. This is a readers, writers workshop model. They had done a shared reading with a text. All of the students had been pulled up to the front of the class on the carpet. The teacher read a section of the text to them and then had them head back to their desks with a hard copy of the text. And students were making an inference about the character based on text evidence. Then what they were doing is creating a statement about their inference. And they were typing that into Padlet, which is kind of like online post-it notes. So the reason they're doing this together is that they are second grade students. So crafting an entire sentence for some of them is a challenge. So they have a partner, they're checking, is this a whole sentence? Do we use a period? Is this the right content? And then they have a hard copy of the text because they need to go back and look at the text evidence. So this is developmentally appropriate. This is engaging for them. They are empowered to be creative. Like, they have to write a whole sentence. There were no sentence starters for them. And the reason this is the right fit and right tool for the job is that Padlet was then shown on the big screen in the classroom. So all the students came back up at the end of that portion of time, and they looked back at the Padlet responses as a class. And they could see each other's answers. It was a bit, the thinking was very visible. And the teacher could say, let's talk about this one. Is this a strong inference? Do they have the right text evidence? And they were able to look at that really closely. And so they have that authentic environment where, or the authentic audience, where they all know they're looking at each other's work. They're making it very visible, and they are learning more because they're looking at that together. Then another thing that we talk to our schools about is the idea that technology will amplify what's happening in a classroom or a school. And so the following things are really necessary for that to be a positive amplification, which is what we want. So we want to focus on our expertise in pedagogy. The example I think of for this most often is thinking of things like, what level of Bloom's taxonomy questions are you asking? Like, if they're just yes or no questions, or sort of lower level Bloom's taxonomy, like recall questions, that's not the best pedagogy. We want to be thinking about open-ended questions that really push on students' thinking. Another one that's very easy to think of is effective classroom management practices. And often it's easier to think of the negative. So if you don't have effective classroom management practices and you introduce technology, you can really see the problem. Like, that becomes amplified. And one thing I would also say about this amplification piece is that sometimes technology makes some things visible that haven't been visible. So an example I think of quite a bit is a student who's off task. So a student who's gone to the wrong website, that student was probably, or, you know, very likely off task before, but it maybe wasn't quite as visible, right? So they were off task by daydreaming, or they were off task by not writing anything on their paper yet. But when they open another tab, we can ask they are. So it kind of changes that. So that's one for classroom management. So it doesn't mean put all the computers away. It means teach students to monitor themselves, to learn how to stay on task, et cetera. And then the third one is that use of data to inform instruction. So without technology, teachers are still doing this, right? We're still pulling our groups together. We're still thinking about our last formative assessment and where kids are. And so those things can become amplified with technology. And linked there in the document, the readiness to benefit, those three things are outlined a little bit more with alignment to Danielson, which is what we use in our school district. And then next, we also think about we don't just jump to personalization. I also know when I was teaching, so I taught for 11 years. It took me a long time to become a very good teacher. But I had to start with strong lesson design. Then I moved to workshop model where students were more independent. And then I was able to get to a place of differentiation that can then lead to personalization. So when I tried to think about personalization and what every kid in my class needed, I was overwhelmed. And a lot of teachers are perfectionists. And so that overwhelmed makes us think like, well, I'm not going to do that well. So I'm not going to go there yet. So I tried to think of smaller pieces and thought about, well, how do I meet the needs of this group? And then how do I add in this group and then this group? And so that's differentiation. But then once I was thinking about individual students and asking them to push on that, I could get to that place of personalization. And I think this is important to look at because this still means that you are being very thoughtful about how you design things, and it's a learning progression. All right, and I'll pause there to see if there are more questions because I thought I saw one.
There's been some really amazing questions. And some I think you might actually get to, so I'm holding on to them for a little bit. And some I feel like are really relevant to what you're talking about right now. But one of the pieces that I read, Willie asked, what ways have tracking of the data influenced accountability?
That's a great question as well. So it's interesting. I think historically, there had been some conversation around like fidelity to minutes, and that kind of tracking really pushed on this idea of like you have to have kids get a certain number of minutes. And while I know programs make those minute recommendations and those are important, what we're trying to shift to is we're really accountable to student learning and using all of the resources available for that. So what are the things that are going to help us get there? So how do we then use everything at our disposal to make sure we're meeting learning goals? And what do we modify? When do we use something different? The other thing that's happened, and this is connected to the tracking of the data, but not exactly, but it's connected to that accountability piece. That survey that we sent helped a lot of teachers realize what they weren't doing. And I know that because those were the kinds of responses that people said to me. They said, when I was answering that survey, I realized I was only doing two of those things and I could have been doing like eight of them, which I really appreciated that people could be that, you know, honest about it and transparent about it, and that it helped them see, oh, I could be doing these other things. So I guess that's one way we were tracking data. And so it let people know, like, we are all accountable in this. So we want to be making sure that we are choosing the best instructional practices and supporting that. So that did increase accountability.
Well, and that's great, because that even sounds like kind of that intrinsic accountability even more than the extrinsic of, are you using this every day?
Yes, and we were trying to get away from that. So we actually removed any kind of language around minutes and around that kind of accountability because we wanted the accountability to be to student learning and to instructional practice.
Absolutely. It's all about learning, right?
Yes. More questions, or are we going to save some?
You know what? There's another one that Matthew asked way back in the beginning that I think we could touch upon right now. But how do you address equity when it comes to work outside of the school? And I know that's going to be especially relevant to you with the population of the Renton School District.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one thing that I have been really clear about, or what I started doing in my classroom when I shifted toward this model, and I'll just say really quickly, Cynthia, my example in my classroom, I taught language arts and was able to personalize in my classroom. So not just for math, the survey that I shared was a math survey, but this really applies to all content areas. It's an overall instructional model. But one thing that I had to be really careful about, because I worked in the school that was 85 to 90% free and reduced lunch, is homework in general. So my students had a lot of demands on their lives. And I felt like, hey, if they are here working hard for 6 hours a day, they need to go home and be kids, or they need to go take a break and be with family. They need to do some different things. So it's sort of a different philosophy around homework. But that's where I tie that equity piece in, where people are asking You know, how can you ensure that kids can do this at home? Well, we can't in some ways. So we think about what can we do within our instructional model and what can we give kids access to within class. That's not to say we're not also finding some solutions. So we are looking at how can we provide internet service to families who don't have that yet. So we're trying to partner with the city and the county to find and some private organizations to do like hotspots that people can rent, particularly for secondary, for high school. But I do think we want to think about what can we do within the school day, because that is what we really have control over. And then what opportunities can we try to open up outside of it? But I feel like that's one of the big ways we can address equity, is not saying, you know, you have to do 3 hours of homework, because that's not available to every kid.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. And then the last section we have here is really around this growth in instructional practice. So as I described, we have this team of teachers that we pull together once a month, who are classroom teachers, full-time classroom teachers, and then they receive a stipend to support technology integration in their school. So we have had them share some of their best practices. And this teacher shared her model for exploring math, and her digital learning strategy was to use a two-station rotation model. And she found the strengths of it were that she could effectively reduce class size and focus on small group instruction. A limitation, you know, it requires planning and high student independence, but you can get there, right? Like, we can plan for those things. So she shared with us how she had set things up for her students, and a Prezi is linked there at the bottom that you can look through. She shared with us, like, here was my entry task to activate their thinking around this. Then this is how I actually organized the class. And then these are their responses. And she actually brought for us post-its that kids had written on and let us look at their exit tickets. And she had asked for feedback on the process. So she was doing some formative assessment around their math learning, but then she was also asking, like, how was this process? And I think everybody's favorite was this fourth grader had written, like, Ms. Trang needs to work on her lesson planning because I found a mistake. Like, you know, they have to give you that kind of feedback as well. But what she found is they were super engaged. And the thing that she loved is that she taught story problems to 15 students at one time rather than 30, which is hugely different. So I found that same thing in my language arts model, where I was teaching to groups of 8 rather than groups of 32. When you teach to a group of 8, the accountability is so different. The engagement is different. You can hear every voice rather than in your class of 32, where you hear the same 5 kids all the time. So she shared with us that, and then her reflection around what she was going to do next. So that you can look through that. We also had a seventh grade science teacher who showed us how he was using a tool to assess quickly and provide feedback. So he was really working on increasing student engagement, assessing student understanding, and then providing immediate feedback to students about their understanding. So one limitation of clickers, which is what he used, and his slides are also linked there, is that you can ask multiple questions, or sorry, you can only ask multiple choice questions. So that's something a little tricky with this. So he talked about, like, you don't use this every day. You maybe use it like once every 2 or 3 weeks. And he talked with us a lot around how you craft a discussion about multiple choice questions. So rather than just like, did you get it or not? It's, why is this one close? Why is this one not close? He used some of it to kind of like set up a debate. So he was showing us how that could be done. And then we also thought about lower levels, like lower grade levels, how you could do the same thing, but the answers that you could create in Plickers would be pictures. So students who are not literate yet could do that. Or if you have a high ELL population, for any answer, you could have written and a picture, so they have that additional support. So again, it was really around a strategy, something that can help you think about how to give that feedback to students. And then we have also been really trying to highlight our teacher leaders who are often running with this. So as I said, we added about 3,000 more devices for students this year. We're piloting 6 tools. Like, we're making some big shifts. And one of our schools will be a one-to-one middle school next year. So this list here are teachers from that middle school. And they, on Friday, We have late starts every Friday. And last Friday, we had a 90-minute late start. And teachers at that school led 30-minute sessions. So all the staff at the school could go attend any of these two sessions. And what we set up were different learning opportunities. So I'll give you a minute just to kind of read through them. But there is one around a rotation model. There is one around media and digital literacy. So we just had different kinds of things that people could go attend. So I'll let you read it for a moment, and then I will talk about the way that this was like built, and then how it played out and was received. All right, so on this Friday, I was able to pop into all six of these stations, and this was really exciting because colleagues were learning from each other. These were people who had taken some big risks in their classroom and had, you know, kind of like gotten a little messy and had some great successes. And that's what we really wanted to share, that like risk taking and learning are uncomfortable and messy. And we ask our kids to do that all the time, and we need to be doing it as well. So these teachers like put together amazing presentations. They were so well done. And what was really great was at the end, we all kind of reflected on it together, and people said, well, it's fantastic that we have these experts in our own building. And another comment that I was not expecting, which was really great, was from session B around opportunities for collaboration and feedback using productivity tools. This teacher had kind of shown how you can make the writing process a collaborative, visible one. And what someone else took away from it is when you have students create a first draft digitally, everybody's turned something in. So you don't have like that student hasn't turned anything in. Like, yeah, they already made it. Like they've already created their draft. It was the do now. It was the entry task. So then you already have some work from that student, and you have some places to like push on them because you can see everything without having to dig into their notebook. So that was really exciting to see just the different things people took away from it. These teachers being like really fearless leaders in their school and really thinking about what they could do for students. And then just two comments or feedback from teachers that we have heard is having consistent access and the ability to like play around has been really impactful on student learning in their classrooms. And that takes us to the end. And I know I saw a few questions about rotation model, but I also wanted to just mention that like, we have done a lot of modeling of that risk taking and then celebrating growth. And I think that's also what's allowed some of this to happen. So we've done that with our teacher leader group and then specifically at our one-to-one middle school. And we are finding, you know, amazing, strong, brave leaders everywhere, which is super exciting. So now I will open it up for general questions, and I'll ask you to lead me, Kelly.
That sounds great. In fact, I'm going to pop back on too. All right. Well, thank you. That was amazing. We've had some questions throughout that we were able to talk about, but there's some other ones that were really good. I just wanted to give us kind of a moment for you to be able to kind of wrap up. Earlier, Barbara asked if, and this is such a piece that I feel like all teachers and educators really can resonate with, but if authentic learning environments are a vision, why is it or how is it that assessments are made to be so similar?
Ooh. That's a great question. You know, it's interesting because I think of, you know, we have state testing where we don't have a lot of flexibility, but I think that our end of unit assessments, while we do sometimes want to align them with that, with for us, SBA, we want it to look sort of similar. So kids are not being tested on the test when they get to it. We want them to be tested on the content. So they do need some of that practice, but I also feel like we need to ask students more, how do you want to demonstrate your learning? What are all the different ways that you could demonstrate your understanding of this? What can be a challenge for a teacher is thinking like, well, I have one rubric for this, but the rubric should be looking at the learning, not the product. So there are ways that we can think about differentiating what we're allowing as demonstration of understanding or mastery so that we do give students more opportunities for that.
And I love how you keep bringing it back to the student voice. It's teacher voice, it's student voice, it's everyone being able to put in their own thinking and their own thoughts as well. Brenda was asking, what are some effective digital tools that you recommend to use in the classroom?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me was starting to use a learning management system. And I've seen that in the chat as well. People are like, Google Classroom, Schoology, Canvas. Using a learning management system is a way to give students direct access to class content. So in my classroom, I started using Edmodo, and really it doesn't matter which one to some degree, it's just a learning management system. It's really valuable because you can create, like, for example, I put in the learning target every single day and then our learning activities. So I linked those there for students. And then students started pushing on me like, hey, this poster we just co-created, can you take a picture of it and put it in the learning management system so I have access to it? And I would see kids pull up the learning management system on their phone while they're taking notes in their notebook. So they felt like, for some kids, it's hard to look there and copy here. So when they could look at it closer, they felt like, this is for me. I also found that they started using discussion features. So I had some students who weren't at class, who weren't in class consistently, but were still part of class. They were connecting with me. They were sending me a note like, hey, I see that this writing assignment is coming up and I was thinking about these three topics. What do you think? And it was a way where they felt like, this learning is for me. I'm connected to it, rather than like, you missed the handout. It was on the front table and now there are no more copies. Instead, it was like, you can access it whenever you need to. So that was the other thing in terms of me empowering my students. When they would ask, what did I miss? I would say, how could you figure that out? They're like, yeah, I guess I got to log in and go look. The biggest one I would say is using a learning management system. Like, that's a pretty big eye opener. And it can be used in all content areas. So there was a question about high school language. We have a teacher in our district who's been using Canvas in his Spanish class because he was realizing, I can't hear all of my students practicing Spanish during class time. Like, I just can't get to it. So he had them start recording themselves and creating a video in Canvas, and they turn it in. He listens to it and gives them a video response back. He also has saved time doing that because it's beginning Spanish and he'll play it faster than they've recorded. So it's like a minute recording. He can listen to it in half the time because he's fluent, so he can hear it. but that's one way that he has been able to do that in Canvas. And one thing is, it is a lot of, you know, it's a heavy lift at first. There's a learning curve, but what you create is shareable, is replicable. You can use things the next year. You can share things with your colleagues. So we have started having little teams start creating things, and then it can be shared out broadly. So I think that it's worth the investment. And because when your students start saying, like, this helps me, everybody will, you know, you buy into that, right? Like, I'm like, just start doing it. And when your kids start telling you how much they need it, you won't want to stop.
You know, I love how you bring in these applicable examples. And even here, you know, Cindy's even saying, oh my gosh, I love the idea for the Canvas with world language. And I really do suggest that everyone go to the links with the Prezi's earlier, once you get the slides available, so that you have the opportunity to really see what teachers are doing in their classroom right now. Heidi asked, how do you structure your lesson when you're using a station rotation? For example, yeah. If one group is receiving direct instruction, the other group has not received that, what kind of related activity is that second group working on?
Yeah, such a good question. So I'll explain how I set things up because it's a little complicated, so then you can make it more simple. So I did a 4-station rotation, mainly because of the number of devices I had. So I had 32 students and I had 14 devices. So not even close to, it wasn't 2-to-1, right? So I was still working with this model where I'm like, huh, I can't quite get this. So I put people into groups of 4 and I would ensure that 2 of the stations were digital and 2 were offline. So I never wanted a student online for an hour. So they would do 1 of the digital stations and 1 offline. So it was either in person or something independent. And then they would do the next day. And then what I created was an assignment that could kind of stand alone. And so that was what they would access in the learning management system. And they could do that one no matter where they were in the process. I would do another station that was independent practice. And because I taught language arts, I had them read independently because that was always a practice they needed to do. The third station might be something like acquisition of vocabulary. So at the start of a unit, I used to do the thing where it was like, okay, I'm going to teach everybody all the words and we're going to all write them in our notebook together at the same time. I shifted toward giving them online digital flashcards. So something like Quizlet. And so I just kind of said, these are your words to learn, figure out how you're going to do it, make the best decisions for yourself. And then the last station was the one that I was facilitating. So this is the one where I could be more adaptive. So if they hadn't done the vocabulary session yet, I could ask them slightly different questions. So the first day, my kids who weren't there yet, I could set that up sort of differently. By the time I got to the last group, so they'd gone through all the other stations already, they'd done the independent practice, not related to content necessarily, but they'd done that. They had also they'd done the online assignment that was a standalone, and they had looked at the vocabulary. I could ask them much more sophisticated things. But I was the person doing the adjusting. I didn't have to recreate all my other assignments. I just was flexibly adjusting, and teachers are really good at that. Like, we know how to adjust, like, in instruction. So what I would kind of do is just ramp up that station rather than all the rest.
Oh, I love it. And I feel like that's even answered Brenda's question about how rotation can work in a large classroom where you only have 30 kids to one teacher, right?
Yes. And I also would, sometimes the stations were like two students using a device. So they don't have to be working on a device independently. So you can have two kids using something. So there are ways that you can play with things. Like, the variables we don't have are like, you know, how committed we need to be to our students, the time that our class period is, but we can move that within that hour, we can move it around. We can do different things. They don't have to all have their own individual device or access to that, because we can modify some different things, because what they do have individually is that learning.
And I love that you even brought it back to learning, because that's where it all has to start and end, right?
Yes.
Well, thank you so much to Ellen Doerr for this amazingly insightful webinar. I know that everyone is going to be taking away a lot of these aha moments so that they can implement technology with learning into their school and district. I want to give everyone an opportunity right now to learn a little more about our sponsor, which is Dreambox Learning. I myself work at Dreambox as a senior curriculum designer, and my name is Kelly. I forgot to introduce myself in the beginning. I'm just this talking head. Dreambox is an adaptive online K-8 math program, which is designed to complement your classroom instruction. And it is providing a product that is proven to positively impact student outcomes. Dreambox has three main pillars to create student success in math. One is being adaptive. Dreambox adapts to student actions to meet them at their right level at the right time, with the right content. It is rigorous. It's designed to meet the needs of that 21st century classroom using technology, promoting developmental trajectories, conceptual understanding, fluency. And this is all delivered through a curriculum that is standards aligned and evidence-based. We're motivating. Dreambox offers an engaging environment that motivates students to persist, progress, and to achieve student success. And we definitely want students to kind of feel that productive struggle that Ellen had talked about earlier as well. And then, of course, no student would be successful without their teacher. Dreambox is educator focused. We're going to make sure that we're preparing students for success while providing insights to help teachers understand how their learners are thinking and responding to math concepts. Because of time, I'm going to actually skip a little bit over some of these, but I do want to really talk about this one. A study published in 2016 from the Center for Education Policy Research at Harvard University suggests that Dreambox Learning increases student outcomes. And it suggests also that students using Dreambox for only 14 hours in a year can achieve so much more on their NWA MAPS assessment by nearly 4 percentile points. And if you are interested in some more information, feel free to download the entire study done by Harvard University on our website. Also, if you're interested in seeing more about DreamBox, you can also request a demo in the same space. DreamBox is definitely different than what you see on the market. We use very adaptive and pathway-based, research-based lessons, along with virtual manipulatives. So students are not actually looking at a video, seeing how to do it, and then doing it on their own. We have kids in context right away with that productive struggle because what they're doing is making their own conceptual understanding. And then, of course, we want to provide teachers with actionable data so they can look to see what their kids are doing, how they're doing, and what they're working on. And then they can intervene if they would like to work with that student, or they can have them work in DreamBox during a rotation model, as Ellen was talking about as well. We want to make sure, too, that teachers are supported in every way possible because we want to make teachers their math content specialists. And so we have PD to be able to support that. And what we'd really like is to hear more from teachers, educators, administrators of what we can be doing to best support you in the classroom. But thank you again to Ellen. This was amazing. I feel like I took away a couple aha moments as well. Even my largest class was 32. Just like you were mentioning, and it's sometimes the most difficult part is being able to reach every student. But right now you're really facilitating such a wonderful program in your district to be able to reach students and help achieve great learning.
Thank you so much. It was really fun.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.